Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most. Whether it's reactions, matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
This is the Sports Edge with Rick Wolf on your flagship station for New York sports. The Fan, Sports Radio 66 and 101.9 FM, WFAN, New York.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Rick Wolf's Sports Edge. I'm your host, Rick Wolf, and I'm going to try something a little different on this warm and sunny Sunday morning. And you are going to play a major part in this experiment. Because there have been so many developments in youth and amateur sports in recent weeks, I thought I'd let you, the listener, pick and choose which pressing topic or topics you'd like to discuss this morning. Now, let's be honest, there are several to choose from, and I'm pretty much prepared to talk about each and every one of them. But I want you to help lead the way at 877-337-6666. For example, in the competitive world of swimming, did you hear what the international governing body FINA ruled last week regarding transgender swimmers? It was quite a dramatic decision, and it's based, of course, on the ongoing controversy regarding Leah Thomas out of Penn, the Ivy League and NCAA champion swimmer. In effect, FINA has now ruled that anyone who wants to compete in international events, such as the Olympics, as a transgender must have completed their requisite surgery before they reach the age of 12. Now, that's a pretty young age, to be sure, but that's what FINA has decided on. They feel that once a swimmer goes through an adolescent growth spurt as a male, that might give them an extra advantage if they transition to being a woman. And in addition, FINA is also thinking seriously about setting up a third separate category in addition to male and female swimmers in which transgenders can compete. You know, it's funny, as I recall, that was actually a solution that we had brought up here on the Sports Edge and talked about on this show some months ago when Leah Thomas was in the middle of competing in the NCAAs. And you know, the idea was that, well, just like there are Paralympics and there are Special Olympics, maybe there should be a kind of a athletic competition for all other athletes, which would include transgenders. And apparently, it seems like FINA is thinking very seriously about perhaps doing that. Okay, that's one topic we can talk about this morning. Another issue we can talk about is a new age for figure skaters to compete in the Olympic Games. The age is being elevated first to 16 and then up to 17 before figure skaters can compete. The minimum age for skaters will be 16 in the 2023-24 season, and then will go up to 17 for the 2024-25 season in time for the 2026 Winter Olympics, which take place in Italy. The reason why this is happening is because, as you might recall, the Russian figure skater Kamila Valieva, she tested positive for a banned substance at the Beijing Winter Olympics back in February when she was only 15. And that sort of prompted lots of questions about what's the minimum age for competitors in figure skating, because we need to really obviously want to protect the mental health of these minors. And obviously, we want to cut back as much we can on any kind of psychological stress these kids have to go through. So they're going to raise the age to 17. What do you think about that? Is that a good idea? Or has the Olympic Committee, are they going too far with this? And again, this is for figure skating, which makes you think about, what about gymnastics? Because it's very commonplace for young teens to be at the top of the game in gymnastics. We'll see if they follow suit as well. Okay, another topic which is obviously hot these days. We're very much in the middle of the NIL controversy. College athletes are eager to cash in on their name, image, and likeness. And this is clearly going to change the world of college and high school sports, and of course, it's doing so already. The problem is, there's just so little regulation or oversight from the NCAA, it's become a wild, wild west kind of situation. And most troubling is that at the big-time Division I programs for basketball and football, coaches already are complaining that top recruits are being lured by other programs with promises of six-figure or even seven-figure NIL deals. To me, and I realize I may be old school here, this is going to be a problem. What do you think? I mean, if you talk to any young college athlete or high school athlete today, and of course they feel this move with NIL is clearly justified. I mean, come on, it's from their perspective, it's all about free enterprise, capitalism, and cashing in. But for older sports fans like myself, well, we're not so sure. This is really making college sports into all about free agency. In fact, I was thinking this past week when it was announced that Arch Manning, the nephew of Eli and Peyton and the grandson of Archie, has announced that he's going to play quarterback at the University of Texas. Well, I thought that was kind of curious. And again, Arch Manning is the top quarterback prospect in the country, because the University of Texas has a kid named Quinn Ewers, who was all lined up to play quarterback there. If you remember that name, we talked about Quinn Ewers a few months ago as part of this whole NIL situation. Ewers was a superstar high school quarterback from Texas who decided at the last moment not to go to the University of Texas, but to go to Ohio State, pretty much because the state of Texas at that time, just a couple of years ago, didn't allow NIL for athletes. But the state of Ohio did. And yet last year, as a freshman at Ohio State, even though Ewers brought his seven-figure NIL deal with him to Columbus, he rarely played. He just didn't play at all, practically. Maybe one or two snaps the entire season. So after that situation, Ewers decided, well, maybe I should go back home. And he transferred to Texas because he felt, after all, I'll go there, I'll get a lot more playing time, I'll be the star quarterback. And after all, the state of Texas does allow NIL for its athletes. In any event, you can only imagine Quinn Ewers' surprise when suddenly top quarterback recruit Arch Manning decides to go to the same school. That was going to make for a very, very interesting competition later this year, both on the field and, let's face it, off the field in terms of NIL money. In fact, there was a three-day summit recently for college athletes talking about NIL, and what was curious was that most of the college athletes said it was really not up to the school, but it was up to them individually to go out and hustle and find their own NIL deals, that very few colleges were doing anything to help these student athletes. In other words, while some of the big-name stars are already collecting big money in college, most of their teammates and peers were pretty much left to scramble on their own to find sponsors. So what's happening right now is why some colleges have clearly made NIL a priority. Many others are still looking to basically find some direction, and they're trying to staff up to help their athletes. Remember, this is all a brand new wild, wild west kind of territory, and there are very few experts out there on NIL. It seems like an area to me which is ripe for change. Yep, the competition in the NIL space is going to force colleges and universities to adapt, whether they want to or not. Some big-time programs, by the way, have started what's known as collectives. Collectives are sort of like groups of alumni boosters and fans who all contribute to one fund, which is then aimed to provide NIL money to their school's athletes. And while that might seem like a pretty good idea to start, like a more equitable way to basically distribute cash to their athletes, again, it's all sort of brand new and not really regulated. And that's where the concerns come into this. Collectives have come under scrutiny because there are all sorts of rumors about inducements to recruits and transfers that come in. In other words, if you come to my school, my college, then we'll make sure you're guaranteed a lot of money from this collective bunch of dough that we've collected from the alums and the booster club. I mean, This is screwy kind of stuff. It's scary. 877-337-6666. And before we go to a break, because I do want to get your thoughts and comments about any of these topics, right next to NIL deals is the NCAA transfer portal. And that's here to stay. The transfer portal, what do you feel about this? What are your predictions? I mean, if you're an athlete who was a breakout year at your current college, aren't you going to be tempted to go to a bigger university where there is more media exposure and presumably, yes, more NIL money? How does all this get supervised by the NCAA? I mean, for years, the NCAA has always complained that they never had enough manpower to oversee all the infractions. And now we have transfer portal concerns and NIL. And don't forget, just last summer, the NCAA lost the ruling of 9-0 in a Supreme Court case, the NCAA versus Alston, in which the entire Supreme Court agreed that the NCAA, as it's currently put together, is on thin ice. A direct quote on that case from Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh, the NCAA's business model would be flatly illegal in almost any other industry in America, end quote. So, I mean, the NCAA, they're trying to watch their own situation as to whether or not they're going to be a viable entity moving ahead. Now, look, the point is, and you get this, won't some big-time D1 coaches have, in effect, a secret army of recruiters who scour other colleges and who will try to basically woo top promising athletes to their school? I mean, I can very much envision a top Division III player being, quote-unquote, unofficially wooed to transfer to a top D1 program. Not only would the kid get a full scholarship, since, of course, D3s don't give money, but also get NIL money. Seems very logical and very human and also very fraught with all sorts of concerns. Remember, these are the kind of concerns we're talking about here, and I want to talk about these issues with you this morning. The NCAA is trying to figure all this out as they go along, which concerns me because they have their own issues in terms of manpower and trying to enforce everything. And again, it seems that the NIL and transfer portal, they're here to stay. Remember, the transfer portal, by the way, that's only been around for really just about 4 years. It was introduced back in 2018. So that, too, is still a work in progress. That's clear, but not much else is clear. Okay, that's the menu for this morning. Pick out a topic you want, or feel free to select another topic from the world of amateur or youth sports, and let's get it going here. 877-337-6666. I'm asking you, the Sports Edge audience, to pick and choose a topic to talk about this morning, whether it's the impact of NIL or of the transfer portal in college, or raising the age of Olympic figure skaters to 17, or banning transgender swimmers from international competition unless they went through their transition before the age of 12. 877-337-6666. Let's start our conversation with David, who's somewhere on the road this morning. David, good morning. You're first up on the fan.
Hey, morning, Rick. Thanks for taking my call. Really enjoyed this intro and your approach to sports topics. I wanted to just sort of touch base with regard to the NIL topic and try to bridge it into some bigger topics. You know, I guess the question I have, and maybe you can help answer it, there's a lot of money in college sports, clearly, right?
And, yes, of course.
You know, we hear about tremendous amounts of dollars for paying, you know, for the deal, TV deals, and the coaches. And, you know, it also makes me think about the whole college industry of college, and you know, you can see now college tuition has expanded tremendously. It's so much more expensive for kids to go to college, and I guess the question I have overall: where is all this money going? You know, why is college sports generates a lot of dollars? The tuition is so high. You hear about kids, you know, graduating college with tremendous debt. Where's it going? Who's getting all this money? I'm curious. Is it the professors? Is it the dorm RAs? I don't get it. You know, maybe you can help me out.
Well, David, I don't think I have all the answers on that one, because obviously you're asking a very very, very smart and very difficult question. Yes, we all know that college sports, particularly at the Division I level for the revenue-producing sports, obviously football and basketball come to mind, but there are other ones as well. Down south, Division I baseball is big money. Certainly ice hockey at the D1 level can be a lot of revenue. Women's basketball, of course. I mean, the point is that the fact is there are some revenue producers, but the truth is most of the college sports do not make money. There are losses for the university, and somehow the university has to find a way to support all those. Now, obviously, that comes from the monies that are generated from the revenue sports. But again, in terms of why college is so expensive, I'm not an expert as to why that is, except we all know that tuition does go up every year, room and board, books, all that stuff. We also know that top professors, university presidents, they make hundreds of thousands in salary because obviously they're out there trying to, particularly the presidents, trying to woo the alums to give more money back to the school. But then again, the other question always sort of pops up is, well, why do these universities have such staggering amounts of money as endowments? I mean, my own alma mater, Harvard, I mean, I think they have an endowment, the last time I checked, of something like $40 billion. That's 40 with a B, $40 billion. And where is that money being spent? Can't some of that money find its way back to athletic programs or to other situations that the school needs? I don't know. I mean, it's a concern. And the other side of the coin is, as you said, the fact is so many kids come out of college these days so deeply in debt with student loans. And that's why we're in the middle right now of trying to have a situation where we're trying to get President Biden to try to ease and release kids from some of those so staggering debts. It is a problem. But in terms of the world of sports, this is, let's face it, a lot of money is being generated here. And NIL, as I said earlier on, the kids who are in college, they think this is all fair. Because after all, the coaches they play for, some of them make multiples of millions of dollars. And basically, the kids are the ones out there doing the hard work on the fields and running the risk of injury. So there's a lot of controversy about this. I don't think anybody has an idea yet as to how to solve all this. So right now, it is what it is. And again, we're trying to figure this out bit by bit by bit. Anyhow, David, thank you for the call. Interesting perspective on this. I'm not sure I can provide any insight, but at least we know there are concerns out there. Let's go to Louie out in Lynbrook. Hey, Lou. Good morning. You're on the fan.
Hey, Rick. How are you?
Good. How are you?
All right. One question I'd like to present is... the kid now says when he's going to a coach, he says, "What are you going to offer me?"
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it used to be before, "What can you do for me as a player?" Now, "What are you going to offer me?" And then, "How are you going to coach me?"
Look, you really sort of nailed on the head. It wasn't that long ago where if a kid was being recruited, at some point, he or his parents or she or his parents would say to the college coach, "Okay, I'm really interested in going and playing for you. A couple of thoughts. First of all, is there any athletic scholarship money you can offer me?" And obviously, that's a very important consideration because, if there is money, that has to be discussed as to what kind of scholarship the kid might get. Second question is usually like, "Okay, coach, if I come here to the program, what's my chances of being a starter my freshman year?" Now the third question into the mix is, "Okay, am I going to start my freshman year? How much money are you going to give me in scholarships?" And as you said, Lou, now the question is, how much extra NIL money are you going to promise me?
It's ridiculous. Rick, before it used to be that kids are being interviewed by the coach. Now the kid is interviewing the coach.
Yeah, I mean this is a business transaction, and if the kid doesn't ask the question, guarantee you somebody, either a family counselor or their parents or somebody's going to say, "But this is a pretty big school, pretty big university. You guys have millions in your endowment, and you guys have a big athletic program. What kind of NIL?" And honestly, if you're the coach and you really want to get this kid to go to your school, you better have a pretty good answer. You just can't talk in vague terms like, well, we're still trying to figure this out, or we're still trying to find somebody to be hired for to head up an NIL department. No. Too many universities already have these things in place. And I know some universities, they say, well, we have to put you in touch with our sports information department. Maybe they can help you with NIL. Or they might say something, well, you're on your own in terms of generating your own sponsors and whatever. That's the last thing a kid wants to hear, because they know that other universities and perhaps other schools that are trying to recruit him or her are saying, you come here, we guarantee you, you're going to get an extra $5,000 a month in NIL money. I don't know how you handle that if you're the coach. And by the way, it's not just D1 programs. People forget. NIL applies to D2, D3, high school in many cases. Lou, you've coached for many years. How would you handle this?
How do you do this? Kids are interviewing you.
Yeah.
You're not interviewing kids and how to bring them in. They're interviewing you to come in.
Yeah.
What are we doing here? That's what I want to know. What's going on here?
We live in a wild, wild west, my friend. Things have just changed 180 degrees, no question. Hey, Lou, thanks for the call.
Take care of yourself,
Ray. Yeah, good luck. But Lou's right. Everything has changed. It's now all of a sudden it's the student athlete, the recruit, who holds all the cards. And that's really what it's beginning to be more and more about. Let's move on. Let's go to Howard Beach, and Dan is next up. Hey, Dan, good morning. You're on the fan.
What's up, Rick? Good morning. So, sorry to bring up such a sensitive topic, but, with transgenderism, with the Olympics, with that guy that went there, and he just blew by these young girls, they sweat and tears, blood and everything. And all of a sudden, this guy comes in and just blows by them, destroyed them. There's got to be a line that's drawn. So at what point is enough enough? So are we going to put female transgenders in the NFL or as a kicker? All right, so you miss an extra point or a doink that gets blocked, and it's between you and this transgender woman. You're going to just declare her? No, because we're made different in that essence. When is enough enough? I'm just, listen, I get it. It's sensitive. People choose their own, whatever the case is.
Yep.
But that was so unfair. What that guy, I'm sorry, that was a man versus all these young women that trained their butts off, and he got the gold. Unwarranted. No way that should have been legal. But, hey, you know what? Everything's cool. Everything's good. No big whoop, right? No,
well, Dan,
it is a big problem.
Dan, this is exactly, and that's exactly what we're talking about, and thank you for your call, because, you know, on one hand, yes, we all believe in obviously gender equity. Title IX has been a huge, huge win for all female athletes. We all agree upon that. But it gets a little tricky when you start saying, okay, now we're going to all compete on the same equal playing field. And suddenly you sort of say, well, you know, and it's a very ticklish, very diplomatic kind of subject. Say, well, this individual who dominated in this sprint or in this race, the swim, I mean, the fact is that that woman used to be a guy and obviously went through adolescence as a guy and benefited from all the growth spurt and testosterone as a male. And now he's transitioned to being a woman, and this is the whole argument that somehow these individuals have a built-in sort of advantage because they're bigger, stronger, faster. This is what we're talking about. This is why FINA decided, well, we think we're going to basically say, no, you can't compete unless you've gone through your transition before the age of 12, which is obviously before adolescence. That wasn't just a age they pulled out of a hat. They said, we want to do it before they go into their teenage years. And two, they're basically saying, we want to be fair and equitable so everybody understands that they need a level playing field. And that's why they're suggesting we may have a new category for all other athletes who aren't basically male or female, or, you know, in terms of their sex and gender. So this is what we're talking about here. We live in unusual times. We all want to have equity. We all want to be equal. But at the same time, we also have to understand there are some biological differences that go into the mix. So, I mean, nobody has a precise answer. Nobody has a complete answer. Nobody has any real sense of a definitive way out of this. But it's something that we're clearly talking about, something that will have to be addressed. And there will be decisions being made. It's as simple as that. I mean, obviously, Leah Thomas was allowed to compete in college, in the Ivy League, and also the NCAAs. And by the way, FINA, from what I understand, FINA is mostly for international competitions like the Olympics. I don't think necessarily they have any ruling power over the NCAAs, but obviously all these governing bodies, they like to be on the same page so there aren't any conflicts of interest as competitions take place. Interesting stuff. Again, there are no answers. We're trying to find our way, you know, step by step. All right, let me take another break here. When I come back, I want to continue with your calls. We can talk about NIL, transfer, whatever you want, because I think this is all these topics need real conversation. And I appreciate very much you giving a shout in here at 877-337-6666. When I return, I'll go right back to your calls. Stay with me. Hey, friends, don't forget, you can always find me at AskCoachWolf.com, and you can get a preview of the next coming show on Twitter at AskCoachWolf. We're talking this morning about a variety of issues, what do you feel is the biggest pressing topic in terms of amateur and youth sports today, whether it's NIL? We just heard from Lou from Lindbrook, as a longtime coach, saying everything is, the tables are turned. Now it's the kids basically interviewing the coach and the university as to, you know, why I should go there. I mean, it's in terms of how much money are you going to pay me, not just in terms of a scholarship, but also in terms of NIL money. It's really unbelievably how quickly these things have come about. The transfer portal is here to stay. You're going to see kids realizing, well, in the old days, you had to sit out a year if you transferred from one program to the next at the D1 level. Nowadays, you know, it's just going to be, okay, let's move on. And if I go to your school, am I going to play right away? I mean, it's just unbelievable. Okay, let's get back to our callers at 877-337-6666. Let's go to Hall of Fame coach Jack Smithlin over in Jersey. Jack, good morning. Jack, let me ask you this. Speaking of NIL, let's say you're a Division III coach, softball coach, and you're trying to recruit some softball players for your program. Have you thought about NIL? How is that going to work with you? Certainly, you've got to be thinking about this as a recruiting part of the package, correct?
Oh, definitely. But before I get started, I just want to say this. You know, I never thought your shows could get any better than they usually are, but, you know, this is like being at a Chinese restaurant today. You know, one from column A and two from column B. I don't know where to start, but being that you brought up that topic, I'm going to start right there. You know, right now I'm trying to recruit this girl, local girl from New Jersey, who's being also looked at by a D1 school. Now, I coach at a D3 school. I coach at New Jersey City University in Jersey City, which alone is a tough place to recruit to, even though Jersey City is being built up beautifully, more restaurants, so it's a little bit easier to recruit to Jersey City. But the good thing is that St. Peter's is also in Jersey City. So this coach is looking at this girl, and I'm thinking, you know what can we possibly do? You know, I'm thinking maybe I could buy her a free pass to McDonald's for a year or something like that. I don't know, but you know, here we are looking at this, and I'm ready to call. I am ready to call and reach out to an alumni that's very, very into helping coaches at New Jersey City University recruit. I'm going to call him up and ask him what his suggestions are. We have a, right down at the end of campus, we have a diner, and, you know, everybody goes and eats in this diner, and our university is good advertisement for this diner. I might go in and approach this person and ask them if they have anything so we can get this great player. And, you know, it's funny because it is. The NIL is now opening up doors. But, you know, like Lou was talking, I believe, about, you know, that NIL stuff is basically for that select athlete, that kid that can go in and say that. You know, that quarterback from Texas and Ohio State and back to Texas again. I mean, this kid can't buy a break, but, you know, but he's still a very rich boy because of it.
Correct.
You know, it's a great topic. It really is a great topic. This is and the NIL opens up doors for coaches like me. You know, maybe she's not that great that this D1 coach from St. Peter's really needs her. He has four outfielders coming back. I just graduated all three of my starting outfielders. So there's a plus for me if this kid wants to play right away. So, yes, the NIL opens up the doors for every single coach, D1, D2, D3, possibly even these great junior colleges, these JUCO teams that are great programs. So, you know, that's a great topic.
But, Jack, here's the concern, though. It's, as you well know, since you've been, you know, out in the recruiting wars, you know, trying to find kids to come to your program,
yep.
That's hard enough on its own, and the traditional recruiting of scouting kids and talking to them and doing your background and so on and so forth. Now you're saying, okay, I can try to find a way to get them to consider going to New Jersey City University if I can find them some extra NIL money. That adds another.
Exactly.
That's another piece of the puzzle or another load that goes on to you as the coach. And I can just see if the kid decides to – you get a kid some extra cash on a monthly basis, won't the other women on the team sort of say, well, how come, coach, you didn't do that for me as well? I mean, it gets to be sort of a tricky proposition, don't you think?
Yeah, but you know what my answer to that is? Seriously, I didn't need to. You know, you chose to come here. I recruited you. You came here. You know, we're looking at, listen, if a player's playing for me and for Ashley Martinez, you're there because you love the game. D3, you know, used to be the game of I'm there because I love the game because
of course.
You don't get any money.
Yeah,
the only kind of money you get is academic money. But now this opens up the door. And now maybe we people who want to stay home and want to stay near Jersey City, now maybe they're going to start coming to us that are D1 and maybe D2 material. And they'll come to us and say, listen, you know, if you want me to come here, you know, and that opens up the door. It's another option.
I agree. It's just going to be another interesting sort of it's going to be interesting to see how all this plays out. That's what I'm trying to say. And we, as you said, and I agree with this, at the D1 level with the big superstar athletes who are being recruited by all the top programs, of course, that's a different kind of strata, and there's much more money that's going to end up in the kids' pocket from the various sponsors and collectives and whatever. But clearly, kids at the D2 or D1 programs, which are mid-majors, or at the D3 level, it's going to change. And, a kid may come to you, coach, and say, you know, I went out and I got my own sponsor, my own NIL sponsor. Hope that's okay. And you say, sure. You know, I mean, it's just the way it is. It's just, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. Jack, thank you for the insights and on what's happening with your program and being a coach or recruits. It's interesting. Thanks for the call, Jack. We'll talk soon. Let me move on to, let's go to Guy out in Southwest Missouri. Guy, good morning. Welcome to the Fan.
Hey, good morning. Good morning. I've enjoyed listening to the show the last couple of months and thought I'd take a shot and call in, but thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You know, I think the transfer portal is probably the least of my concerns. I understand that given a one-time deal where kids can move on. And right now you've got so many kids, young men and women, that are all just stuck on that escalator because of the COVID years.
Mm-hmm.
So they've got, you know, it's just backed up.
Yes.
Things where you got kids coming out of high school now that really don't have a place to go. And if they do get somewhere, maybe they push someone out of a starting role that they would have had otherwise. So I'm okay with that. And NIL, I think, is just a mess. I think it's something that, you know, we here in Southwest Missouri, and I know people that typically are listening now, Missouri State's part of the Missouri Valley Conference. They lose maybe the best player in the conference. He goes to Mizzou.
Yep.
You know, gets a house and a car and a six-figure income. Another kid from here went to high school here, went to Mizzou as a player, and he decided that he's going to Arkansas for a six-figure income. And he's walking into an Arkansas team that he's probably not going to see any playing time.
Yeah, well,
with everything that they've got coming back.
I mean, it sits there, and you sort of say, well, who's the victim here? Because as I said early on in the program, Guy, it's the kids today all feel a sense of entitlement. They figure, well, gee whiz, the college coach is making millions of dollars. How come I can't cash in? I'm the one out there, you know, busting my my butt and running sprints and trying to get in the game. And, you know, all I get is maybe a little scholarship money, but why don't I get some extra money for doing this? So we basically have turned our college athletes, if there was any question in the past as to whether or not they were professionals, they are now professionals. They're getting paid. Simple as that.
They are indeed. And I don't think anything's going to rein this in except perhaps maybe, with 50 years of Title IX, the women get involved and say, wait a second, all this money's going, to college football, to these players, and going to the Division I, one-and-done type college basketball players, and maybe some baseball, especially when you get into the SEC. But, things have just changed so much. I can remember when I was in school, and I'm a former college NCAA quarterback and NCAA baseball player. Mm-hmm. Both my sisters were good athletes. Then I went into administration. But when I was in high school and elementary school, if I got sent home with a note, I was in trouble. I mean, I was eating spinach standing up for a few days. I got into teaching, then if the teacher sent a note home, the teacher was in trouble.
Well, as you well know, Guy, things have changed since the time you were playing sports in high school and college. And quite frankly, the whole landscape and the relationship between student athletes and coaches and parents, as we have documented on the show for years, it's changed dramatically. And, it's just the way it is. And kids today, they have a sense of, I'm a good athlete. I want to go to the school. I'm being recruited. I'm going to ask the coach who's recruited me, this is great. Love to go here. A, will I start as a freshman? Because if I'm not, I'll look at some other school. And B, how much NIL money are you going to generate? And for me, because I don't have to do any work. I just have to maybe do a couple of autograph signings or do a couple of social media posts. But that's real money in my pocket. And as you said, it's nowadays you got kids going through college who are making literally hundreds of thousands of dollars off these deals. You got to wonder at some point who's going to corral all this in. Because quite frankly, I don't think the NCAA is going to have the power to do this. Hey, Guy, thanks for listening and thanks for the call this morning. I do think this is what we're looking at here. And again, I know I've mentioned this in years past, but again, it bears repeating. Really think the time has come to give some serious thought about having a commissioner of youth sports in this country, some sort of panel of experts who could basically be independent and look over the landscape and decide, okay, how are we going to basically corral all this in and do the right thing for not just the student athletes, but for the schools and everybody who's involved? Because right now, this is a free-for-all, and it's people have more questions than ever about NIL, transfer portals. What do I do? What are my rights as a student athlete? And so on and so forth. I think that seems to be the next step. Let's move on. Let's go to Ron over in Wyckoff. Hey, Ron, good morning. You're next up on the fan.
Good morning, Rick. Just interested to talk to you about it. You're concentrating all this conversation about NIL. It's talking about a very few athletes. Let's talk about the reality. Only 5% of high school athletes go on to college. The general problem in youth sports is the parents. They have unrealistic expectations. I'm involved in a league, and I've been urging for years that they have a forum where the parents understand that the scholarship availabilities are absolutely very, very limited for a very few students. In the meantime, these parents are spending thousands of dollars chasing their unwanted dreams and creating all sorts of problems at the youth level. But we don't have enough officials unless they deal with the parents and get them in line and get the officiating back. There's going to be no youth leagues because there's going to be no one who wants to deal with it.
That's correct. I mean, we've been talking about that on the show for, I don't know, two decades, Ron. We're all aware of the fact that the sports parents and their expectations. The problem is this. When the athletic directors at the high school level or the coaches sit down with the parents before each season and they explain to them, according to the latest NCAA stats, that less than 4% of all high school varsity athletes, less than 4%, will ever make a college team, whether it's Division I, Division II, or Division III. The parents sit there and they hear this and they nod their head and then they say to themselves, well, yeah, but my kid will be one of those 3 or 4% who do go on to play in college. They don't seem to understand that 96% of the kids, which is a pretty high percentage, are not going to go on high school sports. They just don't get it. So they feel that every time the kid doesn't get enough playing time, or the coach doesn't make them a captain, or the kid doesn't make the all-league team, or the kid isn't is playing out of position, what happens is that the parent thinks that obviously either the coach doesn't know what he's doing or doesn't know what she's doing, the AD is incompetent, the referees, the umpires are incompetent, and they get out of control. Because they're spending a lot of money to make sure their kid gets on to play sports in college and gets a full scholarship or goes to the college of their choice because they've been recruited. It's out of control. And yet the parents still don't seem to understand any of this. That is a huge concern. And, that is the essence of what we talk about here pretty much every Sunday on the Sports Edge. Let's move on. Let's go to Dan in Howard Beach. Dan, good morning. You're on the fan. Dan, we lost him. Well, let me just go on this pathway here because I do think this has been a terrific show because we've covered – this is a really good forum to talk about all these issues because we're hearing from, obviously, sports fans, parents. We're hearing from college coaches. I mean – The shifting sands of amateur and youth sports in this country, as we've discussed for years on the program, it's really sort of coming, it's all sort of accelerating. There are things that are happening that would have never even been considered, 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago. But it's changing and changing dramatically. And I just, I don't know. I as I said, whether it's NIL, because this is going to have to be somehow corralled. There's going to be at some point somebody somewhere is going to either file a lawsuit because the kid feels they got were treated not fairly. The NCAA, which again, even when I was coaching back in the day at the collegiate level, the NCAA always would complain that they didn't have enough manpower to oversee and to basically enforce all the rule infractions to see what was going on. So now we got problems. I mean, it's a concern as to how they're going to now try to not monitor what's happening with the transfer portal. Because, we've seen how many thousands of college students have jumped on the transfer portal because they don't have to sit a year. And they figure, well, maybe the grass is greener if I go to another college where I can play and start and so on and so forth. But then when that happens, who oversees all of that? How does a kid – the kid may go on the transfer portal, but is a kid having secret conversations with that other next university coach about if I come there, will I start, and so on and so forth? What about the scholarship money? I mean, that's a concern. Number two, of course, is right on top of that is NIL. If I'm going to transfer, maybe I'm going to transfer because at that next school I attend, there's going to be NIL money. Because right now at the school I'm at doesn't have that kind of resource. They don't have anybody overseeing that. They're telling me if I want to get some extra money, cash in my pocket as a student athlete, well, that's fine, but go out and do it on your own. And from what I read right now, that's exactly what's happening in most programs. The schools are telling the athletes, if you want to go out and talk to a local, pizza shop about being your sponsor, then go ahead and do that. But we can't do that. We're not going to do that. But now the kid has a really great year, and now he's looking at other schools. Next thing you know, they're saying, you come here, we'll get you another $5,000 a month from NIL money. That's a concern because, it's just, it's a free-for-all. And, of course, we're seeing all these other changes here in terms of the whole recruiting process. I mean, what's happening next? What's the next great development that's going to take place? Is the NCAA basically just going to fold up the tent and go out of business? And so it's going to be run by individual college conferences? How are they going to look oversee the rules? I mean, how does this work? And let's say you're a college athlete in a program. This always concerns me that you see your star quarterbacks getting, $1 million for NIL, and you're not getting anything. And yet you're there basically as a lineman, an anonymous lineman, to help protect that quarterback from getting pummeled. Aren't you going to want to get some of that money too? Don't you feel that that's not fair? It doesn't seem – it's supposed to be equal for all the teammates. How come some teammates are treated better than others? And, I think that's something that has to be addressed at some point. It's really getting to a point where I think we, as I said, I come back to this in the weeks to come, but having a commission or a commissioner of youth sports in this country would be an independent group of experts. You'd have everybody there from, an experienced educator from college, from high school, maybe have a psychiatrist, some other coaches, I mean, pediatricians, orthopedic surgeons, but some real panel of Blue Ribbon experts who could see all this from afar and say, let's talk about what parents need to know and what colleges need to know when it comes to making sure we keep college and high school sports on the right path in terms of not only having fun, but being productive and keeping their mental health in perspective as well. Okay, that's going to do it for me and this edition of the Sports Edge. My thanks, as always, to Ed Arzuman, the Zoom Man. Moose is up next. I'll see you next Sunday right here on the Sports Edge.